Hello everyone, welcome to the Local Shop Podcast. I'm Chris Noyce and this is the podcast for everything to do with the convenience sector and the issues facing local shops. On this episode of the podcast, we're going to be talking about the unfortunate reality that faces tens of thousands of people working in the convenience sector, and that is violence and abuse. This is something that has been a top priority campaigning issue for ACS for a number of years now. And while there is progress being made with both awareness of the impact of abuse and interventions from government, there's still obviously a lot to be done. So I'm going to be joined in a minute by Edward All from ACS, Doug Russell from Shopworkers Union, USDAW, and Sussex Police and Crime Commissioner Katie Bourne, OBE, to talk through all of the content and the context surrounding the issue of violence and abuse, what's changed this year and what needs to change. But first, it's worth pointing out a couple of resources that we hope will be helpful for retailers. Firstly, on YouTube and on the ACS website, there's a short animation designed to help colleagues in store manage incidents of violence and abuse. This animation includes tips on what to look out for, how to de-escalate a situation, and what to do when someone becomes aggressive in store. So check that out if you've got a few spare minutes. And secondly, our annual crime report includes detailed guidance on dealing with all kinds of crime, not just abuse, but also things like theft and fraud. So take a look at that on the ACS website as well. Let's not delay any further. Let's get into the main discussion and talk to Ed, Doug and Katie. Okay, I'm now joined by Edward All from ACS, Doug Russell from Shopworkers Union, USDAW, and Katie Bourne, OBE, Sussex Police and Crime Commissioner. Hello, everyone. Thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Hello.
Great. So obviously, this is a really difficult issue for lots of retailers. I said in the introduction here, thousands of colleagues deal with violence and abuse. And this has been a huge issue for ACS and for USDAW, and of course for you, Katie, as well in recent years. Doug, I'd like to come to you first just to talk about the last year in itself and the challenges that the pandemic has brought. How has the pandemic affected violence and abuse against retailers? Is there more? Is there less? What are stores looking at?
Unfortunately, there's been substantially more according to the surveying that we've done. We did some initial surveying back about March, April time when the restrictions first started to kick in. At that time, there was a lot of shortages in the shops as well because of panic buying. But we've also been doing some other surveying more recently. Just in the last month, we interviewed just over 2,000 shop workers then. And what we found basically is that the levels of violence and abuse have more than doubled from what they would have been in the previous years. In that last survey, for example, something like 85% of the people we talked to said they'd had some form of verbal abuse in the last few weeks. About half of them had received serious physical threats, and nearly one in 10 had actually been physically attacked in that time as well.
Yeah, it's pretty shocking. And does that tally with what you're seeing from retailers, Ed?
Yes, unfortunately, very much so. Our surveys have looked and the results say about a 40% increase in terms of violence and abuse, very much linked to COVID regulations. So our previous report, they'll be familiar with, says, you know, the top triggers for violence and abuse and shop theft around preventing age-restricted sales or refusing to serve customers. The top one now is really coming up at those related measures, which are obviously really important for everyone's safety and colleagues to remind customers to do the right thing. But of course, that does lead to confrontation. Fortunately, it has been rising.
Yeah. And Katie, just bringing you in from a sort of police and an enforcement perspective, how much of a challenge has this been over the last year, both in terms of resource and getting the help to retailers when they need it?
I think, well, the policing of the pandemic was always going to be challenging because the legislation was fairly new. The Act had just come out to respond to it. So it was always going to be difficult. And how do the police manage policing of a pandemic with all the other crime that they have to deal with as well? So it hasn't been without its challenges. But I think for me, what struck me was, I go to local shops all the time. And as a member of the public, I suppose I'd never really noticed before just how abusive some people are. And it had never really come across my radar that shop workers were putting up with this day in, day out. And I was at a conference over a year ago. There was a report there and many of the shop workers, and they were very eloquent around this. And I think for the first time ever, it really came onto my radar and I thought, actually, this is not good. So I then went back to Sussex to do some of my own research into it to find out just what sort of issue do we have. And many, many challenges for policing, and we'll probably talk about those during the podcast. But I think the what's happened now with the pandemic is it's really brought into stark focus the abuse that shop workers are actually undergoing on that front, on that sort of front line.
Yeah, it's an interesting, I guess, psychological question as well, because with lockdowns and with convenience stores and other shops being, for the most part, especially in the first half of the year, the only stores that are open, you kind of then see the best and worst of people, don't you? Because everything's on such a level when people are at home. As soon as they go out into a shop, it's obviously quite a high stress environment. People aren't used to necessarily social distancing measures and regulations. You know, it's a really, I guess it's a really tough thing to try and manage.
Yes, in so many aspects. Sorry, Doug.
Because I think that's part of the reason why we've seen the levels rising, specifically with the conditions linked to the pandemic, the need to maintain social distancing, need now to wear face covering in stores as well. They've become very much the trigger points. As Ed said, they've taken over from the previous things, which are still there in the background, dealing with people who shop theft, with shop thieves, and dealing with people who want to buy age-restricted products where you have to control it. I think part of it is definitely that people are feeling scared by the whole, well, certainly initially were feeling very scared by the whole thing, and that meant that there was heightened emotion anyway. And ironically enough, I don't know if this is Ed's experience as well, but one of the problems we've got is that very often it's actually arguments between two customers that kick off, because one's wearing a mask and one isn't, or one's standing too close to another or doing something that upsets them. And the staff end up having to intervene because it's getting a bit out of hand, and that's something that's quite new as well. The most distressing thing for me, though, is that the new form of assault is spitting or coughing deliberately at an individual. I think that's particularly scary in the context of coronavirus.
Yeah, Ed, did you want to come in there? Because that's certainly something that we've seen, isn't it? And that sort of shop workers and retailers playing referees is sort of a bit of a new thing this year.
Yeah, unfortunately, that has been an issue with in-store conversations having between customers. A bit of confusion around some of the regulations and how they work, about who's required. The exemptions and communication of those exemptions. Of course, there's going to be these changes when you have a global pandemic and it's unprecedented, but it's unfortunate that it spills over into these aggressive situations that shop workers find themselves in the middle of. And, you know, it is not their responsibility to police these things. The guidance and everything is very clear. They should be communicating and encouraging, but not by any means sort of policing these circumstances and putting themselves in harm's way. So that's core message that we've tried to get out and reinforce people, obviously to keep themselves safe, first of all. And of course, there's more we can do. I think, the best approach here is how much we can tie up with government around their communications around face coverings, and also working with policing colleagues who are obviously responsible for enforcing around individuals' compliance with regulations to sort of get those messages out. And we've certainly tried to do that at ACS, and I know others have too. And Katie's been particularly proactive, and other forces in getting that message out. And hopefully we can do 2021, because we're going to have these restrictions in for a bit longer.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And I think one of the things that we see is obviously with the amount of incidents that are going on, you would expect there to be a lot of reporting, a lot of incidents being forwarded to police, but obviously this isn't necessarily the case. And unfortunately, this isn't a new thing either. So not just with the pandemic, but more generally with violence and abuse over the long term. Katie, I'll come to you first. Why do you think so many of these incidents just don't go reported?
There are many reasons. So this is some of the work that we've been doing locally, and certainly the National Retail Retail Crime Steering Group that's chaired by the Minister is looking into this as well. But there are many reasons. But for me locally, mostly because businesses are busy. So I'm talking about the small independent businesses here, often one or two people in the shop. By the time they've reported to the police the theft of something that's £50, that hour that it's taken them to report, they could go and sell more goods. So, there's a feeling that we're too busy to do this. There's also a feeling that the police won't turn up. And in many cases, we know that, that has been the case as well, where police sort of deprioritize things. And sometimes that's because the call handler at the other side doesn't take the information correctly, doesn't ask the right questions. So we've seen locally, and I'm sure this is the case across the country, where a theft has been reported, but what the shop worker hasn't said is that they were physically assaulted or abused, and the call handler has forgotten to actually ask that question, and therefore it hasn't been recorded. The recording of these crimes when they come in is problematic as well with police. So unfortunately, it's a bit of a perfect storm really all around. But I think mostly for businesses, what I hear more about than anything else is, what's the point? Because the police aren't going to bother anyway. And that is something that we've just got to change.
Yeah. And Doug, this obviously plays a lot into the respect for shop workers work and a lot of the work that Asda are doing and the sort of hashtag of it's not part of the job. It's a bit of an uphill battle, isn't it? Making sure that everyone reports what are crimes when they take place in stores.
Yeah, it's very hard. I mean, there are two levels. One is that in the large retailers, it's sometimes quite difficult to report to your employer if there's been an issue. The procedure is quite bureaucratic, and that puts people off because all they want to do is get home at the end of a shift rather than hang about finding a manager to report it to. But equally, there's that feeling still amongst a lot of shop workers, I'm afraid, that it's not something you should be bothering the police about as well. That abuse is part of the job because you are actually working with the public. It's one of those things that we've been fighting against since the start of our campaign, which has been going on for several years now. It's not been helped, I don't think, unfortunately, by the fact that we lost a lot of the police over the last 10 years because of austerity and cuts to the police force. And a lot of that community policing went as well. So there wasn't that regular contact that you used to have. I think in the last year's survey, when we asked our members how often they saw police in stores, in about 50% of cases, they hardly ever see a police person in the store now at all. Whereas previously, there would have been at least a PCSO or somebody out walking around the streets, and there'd been that chance of contact, so you could actually pass on information if you've got information to pass on. And it's rebuilding those kind of links, which I think it's going to be difficult, obviously, with resource issues and the problems that retailers are under as well. But it's important we do all try to do something about that and restore that situation.
Yeah, absolutely. And Ed, does that tally with what you're seeing from retailers? Is it a frustration? Is it time pressures as well?
Yeah, I think it's all of those things in terms of pressure on their time to report. I think also there's a sense of, you know, we really need to reset the boundaries about what's acceptable in terms of stores and engagements between customers and colleagues. Colleagues should, you know, I hope that every violent incident is reported, obviously, because that's, but also that should extend to abuse. And we should be sharing all those things both internally and externally. But I think it's got to a point where lots of people come to work and they sort of expect as part of things now that they will get some form of abuse during the day. And, you know, we've got to reset. It's not part of the job. It's not acceptable. And the first point is, in a real way, is at an individual level to really speak up and talk out and talk about those things and be encouraged to do that by your employer, by your other colleagues and in your community as well. I think that's the starting way to overcome it.
Yeah.
And can I add to this? Just to say, you know, what Doug was saying about the sort of the lack of visibility with policing. So the police are really data-driven. You know, if I say this is an issue and it's being raised by the public, the first thing they'll say to me is, well, show me the evidence. And in fairness, that's what I say back to them. When they want more money, I usually say, well, show me the evidence or, you know, for it. So we do need those reports to come in, because if shops report, then the police or the local district commander or whoever is making that operational decision will say, well, look, we've got a lot of evidence here to show that this is an issue in this area. And they will then deploy and make sure that those officers on the beat include those stores or that particular store or that area in their overall beat. So, you know, we need the businesses to work with us as well, so we can get the evidence in, and then we can, you know, and that's where my role kind of comes in, to make sure that evidence is there and that I can then challenge the police around why they're deploying their resources and why they're not putting them in certain areas.
Yeah, that's really interesting as well, because even on a national level, when we see the crime stats come out on a yearly basis and you see numbers of crimes down, but then reporting down as well, you think, well, it's a bit of a...
Police computer systems, they don't record business crime per se because of the Home Office counting rules and the way it's done. You know, so a few years ago, my force didn't even know how much business crime there was because they didn't record it as business crime. So it might be recorded as a theft or an assault, but it needs to be recorded that it's a theft in a store or an assault of a shop worker in a store. And that way you get a much better idea of that volume of crime that's happening and where it's happening as well. So, yeah, there's still a huge amount of work to do.
Yeah, there's a whole other discussion about whether the term business crime for things that happen in shops is even appropriate, because someone being assaulted goes down as a business crime, but it's, you know, the impact is on a person's family, isn't it? So it's a really, really tough thing to get across. As we're coming up to Christmas now, and I would say it's a really busy time, but for convenience retailers, this whole year has been a really busy time. Tell us about the Keeping Christmas Kind campaign, Katie, and you know what that has been, where that's come from, and you know how you've seen reaction to that over the last couple of weeks since launch.
Well, I mean, it's just been amazing, actually. So Keeping Christmas Kind came out literally because of the concern we've had around the violence and abuse against shop workers. And actually, I've got to thank Usdaw. I've got to thank the Co-op, Southern Co-op and others, many, many others who've put their weight behind this. And we pulled together a couple of videos, and we did it from three shop workers' points of view. But we asked their families to tell the story so that we could see beyond the person and actually the family and friends and those people that it affects. And they've really been courageous. Three shop workers in Sussex and their families have spoken out, and they're on the video. And this has just gone viral. It's been amazing, the support. I was just looking at some of the, you know, the total amount of coverage, the reach just across mainstream media in less than a week has been over 4 million. It's been seen by over 4 million people. And on social media, on Facebook alone, you know, the total reach, we've had more than 55,000 people viewing the videos. The average engagement rate's been 6% on Facebook. Normally, for across all industries, is 0.09% reach. So this has just been incredible engagement across. And I think it's really, you know, it's really hit that nerve with people. Keeping Christmas Kind, it's a simple message, but kindness goes a long way, particularly at Christmas.
Yeah, and there was a part of one of the videos that really stuck out to me. I'm just going to play some audio from that now for anyone who hasn't seen the video. And this was something that, like I say, it just sort of jumps out as quite shocking, but it's talked about almost as if it's normal. So I'll just play that for you now.
Help in any way she wills. The industry that Sammy works in is very tough, but it shouldn't be.
Can I just report an aggressive customer in my shop?
This is Cart Western Road. We've just had an icy one mouse.
He has a lot of challenging customers. He's been verbally abused. He's been in fights. He's had beer thrown at him.
She's been threatened with a knife by a customer. She's also been pushed over. She got a wrist fracture as a result of it. But that doesn't let my mum stop her. She just carries on, pulls herself up, and she just carries on.
So that's just a small clip from one of the videos. Obviously, as you said, the people involved there, real experiences from those shop workers and their families. Ed, when you talk to retailers and their colleagues, does it come across that they're in a really tough industry?
I think obviously there are challenges highlighted by the video and the examples we've seen. We should say that, you know, lots of customers are very positive, engage well with their stores. But yeah, there are challenges, and as I said before, there's a sort of reset of behaviour required, because there is lots of abuse in the stores, and I think one of the biggest challenges for lots of people in convenience is most people that work in stores, you know, they walk to stores, they're from the same communities that they're serving. So something that happens to them at work has a real impact on their lives, because essentially they're working in their community and around them. So, you know, what this campaign really does well is demonstrate the direct impact it has on people when these incidents do happen in stores.
Yeah. I just want to pivot a little bit now to the role of police and crime commissioners. We've talked for a long time about the importance for retailers of engaging with PCCs. From your perspective, Katie, how much power do PCCs have when it comes to holding local forces to account and determining what they should focus on? I mean, you mentioned that violence and abuse and retail crime is obviously quite a big priority of yours. How does that manifest? What does that look like?
As a police and crime commissioner, you know, I have statutory obligations under the Act. And one of those is to set the priorities for policing my county. And those priorities must reflect what local people tell me is important to them and matters to them in policing. So I write, and every one of my colleagues, all 40 of us up and down the country, write a police and crime plan. And that sets out what is important in there to local people. So if you do proper engagement with your local communities and you understand, you would therefore understand what matters to them, and you can reflect that in your plan, you then give that to the chief constable, who then has to deliver to those priorities. And then your job throughout your term of office is to hold your chief constable to account for their performance. And ultimately, you know, I set the budget. I can raise your council tax to pay for policing. So the police come to me and say, we want more money. My first response is always, why? And show me the evidence, and how are you going to spend it? What are we going to get? I hold them to account for how they deliver. And ultimately, I can appoint and, if necessary, dismiss the chief constable. So, you know, the local police and crime commissioner, I know it's a new role. It's only been in 8 years, and a lot of people didn't understand it when it first came out. But actually, from a business and retail point of view, what I'm saying to loads of retailers up and down the country is, get hold of your police and crime commissioner. They're all up for election in May next year. Every one of those candidates, you want to make sure they've got retail and business crime in their manifestos, because if it's in their manifesto and they get elected, they then have to translate that into their police and crime plan. And that means it will become a priority for policing, and you can hold them to account for doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. Ed, you've been doing some work on looking at the local plans of the police and crime commissioners. What are the concerns there around what's in and I guess what's not in those local plans?
Yeah, so obviously we've analysed all the police and crime plans, and that they are updated regularly, but we do see that there is a sort of a gap in terms of recognition of retail and business crime across lots of the police and crime commissioners. Have been pushing them to address it more directly for all the reasons that Katie has just outlined. You know, if it's in the plan, then they have, you know, they're held to account on delivering that. So we'd like to see more police and crime commissioners trying to address that in those plans, and I think that will be a key part of our engagement with the police and crime commissioner elections coming up in May, to get more recognition of that, because, you know, they set the budgets, they set the priorities, so having them recognize that is really important. And I think part of that is going back to Casey's point earlier about making the business case for the investment in this is key, because, you know, you can demonstrate that where shop theft or aggressive behaviour happens in stores, it's likely to be linked to other forms of criminality. So engaging and dealing with those individuals will probably help address other issues of antisocial behaviour in the community as well. So, yeah, it's really important that police and crime commissioners look at that. And when you look at the evidence, though, I think there's a really strong case for them to do that.
And you can get it, there's another way, an angle into your police and crime commissioner as well, is through the victim side. So we're given money every year by the Ministry of Justice to spend on victims of crime in our county. And of course, you know, if you're a shop worker and you've been abused, you've been assaulted, you are a victim of crime. And therefore you can get into your police and crime commissioner, sit down around the table with them and say, what are you doing for victims of retail crime? You know, victims of abuse and assault, do you have a service there that you're properly funding and resourcing to ensure that they're looked after? And how are you reaching out to those victims? Are you aware of those victims? And if you're not, why not? Because it's your job to do it. So there are many ways in. This is making me hugely popular with my colleagues. but actually, it's really important. If we know through a lot of the research and surveys that less than 10% of these crimes actually get reported to the police. So 90% of these crimes, there is a massive amount of crime, volume of crime out there that's happening. The police have no idea about. Now, we could just continue to carry on as we are. But actually, I don't think that's right, because these crimes are the ones that happen in our neighbourhoods. These are the crimes we're more likely to see on a day-to-day basis. And we want those areas that we shop, we want them to be safe environments as well, and happy places to go.
Yeah, Doug, I was.
Yeah, I was just going to come in on that one, because I think what Katie said is very important there. It goes back to what you said earlier, Chris, about the fact that when we talk about retail crime, people think about shoplifters. They think about what's actually seen as a fairly kind of victimless crime almost. It's not, even for the big businesses, it's big money and it's expensive to try and fight against it. But crucially important, it's not just the loss of the goods or the loss of the value in the store. It's the fact that there are workers there who are faced with dealing with those people who are abused and are assaulted in the process. And retail crime, it's actually not, I'm not so worried about retail crime as much as I'm worried about violence to staff in retail. And I think it's the way that that fits into that profile that's crucially important. And it often doesn't get picked up for whatever reasons, as we discussed earlier. So it's very important, I think, we all wake up to that fact that it's actually the big issue that lies behind all of that. And we're very really grateful for the work that Katie's been doing with the Association of PCCs to try and raise the profile on that.
Yeah, so I just want to pick up on something else that Katie said as well, Doug. And Katie mentioned that for victims, they have a sort of route into the Police and Crime Commissioner. Do you think enough shop workers know about that? Or do they think PCCs are sort of just a bit of a sort of far off?
Again, it's part of the problem, isn't it? Because they weren't being reported, because they weren't being treated seriously as an issue, the violence abuse wasn't being treated seriously as an issue, they're not seen as victims, so they don't know about victim support. Victim support isn't set up and geared up to deal with their specific circumstances. Obviously, as a union, we try and pick up a lot of members' cases ourselves, and if there's something wrong with the security in the store, we'll go back and we'll talk to the employer to try and get something done about it. And in the days when the criminal injuries compensation scheme was working more effectively than it did now, we actually used to pick up a lot of cases and help members with CICA claims as well. And there are other organisations out there that help retailers that aren't that well known about, the Retail Trust and organisations like that as well, that are there to try and pick those things up. But they're not always getting through, that's the problem. And even in the large organisations who fund their own employee assistance programmes so that you can actually ring a number if you're feeling stressed because you're being abused and you're worried about it, for whatever reason, the communication of that isn't always getting through to the workers on the shop floor as well. We've all got a lot more to do to try to make sure that the attitudes are changed and that people are treated more seriously in that respect.
Yeah. So as you said, Katie, one of the things that we're coming up to is the Police and Crime Commissioner elections. And as you said, being now extremely popular with your colleagues for raising this issue, and hopefully lots of retailers and shop workers will be going out to their PCCs. What makes a difference when you, what comes into your inbox and makes a difference to you when you're campaigning in terms of your priorities? You mentioned that, like you said, abuse came onto your radar in a much bigger way about a year ago. What should retailers and shop workers looking to be do to make that difference ahead of the election?
Well, I suppose my advice would be locally in your area, you'll probably have some sort of partnership or some organisation. I would form yourselves together and get a meeting with your Police and Crime Commissioner, the current one who's in position, and ask them if they have a business partnership in their area. Some do, but not many. And the ones that do are quite effective. And so that business partnership allows the Police and Crime Commissioner to come together on a quarterly basis or however often it is, and speak to local businesses and really understand the issues, and then say, actually, what are we going to do to tackle them? And then, so what we're doing locally is I've set that up. We meet very regularly. We've outlined the key issues, and we've said, right, we're going to try and solve some of these. We're not going to try and do it all at once, because, you know, if you try and do everything at once, you're bound to fail. So we'll pick off one or two things, do it slowly, grow incrementally. And then I feed that back into the National Retail Crime Steering Group, how we're doing locally. And I'm hoping through that national that I can then roll out some of the good practice and learn from others as well. So, you know, there's lots of ways in, but organise yourself in the groups you've currently got and go and lobby them. Yeah.
Yeah. And speaking of lobbying, Ed, this is obviously a big priority for us and a big priority for retailers. How can we help retailers to make their voices heard over the next few months?
We've got really good advice from Katie in terms of organising locally, and we're going to help retailers do that in the lead up to the campaign starting in March and then the elections in May, to really collate those examples and share them the best you can with all the candidates, to show the impact that it has on your business and to your colleagues as well. So we will be sending out campaign packs and letters that you can use to send to your Police and Crime Commissioners to really get the issue up the agenda. But, you know, understanding and be able to demonstrate the impact is the first step, I think. So if you can collate those things and pull them together in a meaningful way, then we can help you communicate them further up. And, you know, you've seen our crime report and our crime data. That is all based on information that lots of businesses hold. So you can do that in a good and engaging way, and we can certainly help you communicate that further.
absolutely. And like I say, as Ed mentioned, the crime report coming out in March. So I would keep that as a date for your diary for early 2021. Could be in person, could be online, who knows? But keep online for that.
And you could also run hustings as well. So once you've got your candidates in a particular area and their nominations are closed, so you know who they're going to be, I would, as ACS or you know, your BCRP or whoever it is locally that you've got, run a hustings, invite all the candidates along and theme it around business crime and invite all your shop workers and everybody along to it and really raise it up the profile so that those candidates are under no illusions how important this is in their area. And whoever gets elected, it's very difficult for them to ignore.
Yeah, that's a really great idea. And I'm sure there'll be plenty of hustings going around sort of between the first couple of courses of next year. And like you said, there's no better way of holding people to account than to, you know, explain it to their faces and, you know, in a perhaps a competitive environment for people to, you know, to make those commitments. Of course, there's only so much that PCCs can do and so much that local forces can do without intervention from central government. Doug, I'll come to you first because I know that you and obviously others have been involved heavily with a campaign about regulation change. What action is needed now to deal with especially violence and abuse from a regulatory perspective?
Well, I think it's quite interesting that over the last couple of years, we've seen support for this idea building up, not just amongst our members of the shop workers themselves, but amongst all the retail businesses as well. So ACS, BRC, lots of the large retailers, the Federation of Retail News Agents are all signed up to this idea that what we really need is a very clear message from central government that this is a problem that has to be changed and we're not looking for tickets anymore. And the best way to do that is to bring in specific regulation that makes it clear that it is a serious offence to assault or abuse a shop worker in the course of their employment, in a similar way as was done with the Emergency Workers Act a couple of years back. It's part of the problem we have, certainly with England and Wales, is that there are 40 different constabularies we have to try and deal with, and they are all independent. They've all got their own issues. They've all got their different ways of doing things. Even computer systems are different. They don't talk to each other, for example. And we do rely upon central government to give some leadership in this area. There was a tremendous head of steam behind the idea last year, in 2019. But and when the government issued its call for evidence and was, I think, almost overwhelmed by the response it got from retailers and from ourselves about the scale of the problem and the levels of underreporting there were. But unfortunately, then, of course, we had the general election came along and kiboshed them getting that sorted out more quickly. And then immediately after that, we went into the middle of the COVID crisis as well. And so it's taken a bit of the steam out of that sales in that. The current minister is looking at it, looking at some suggestions for improvements. And there are a number of task groups up from the National Retail Crime Strategy Group working on things which are probably due to report towards the end of this year, beginning of next year. But unless we see that strong leadership from the government and from the minister to actually get that message out there, I don't think it's going to make as much influence as it should.
Yeah, and Doug talked about the bill that's trying to get through Parliament, Alex Norris's bill on violence and abuse against shop workers. Obviously, that's part of the solution. What else is on the wish list from ACS about helping to protect retailers and shop workers?
Well, I think the bill and the idea of tougher penalties is central because there's a strong case. You know, shop workers have to do a lot from a sort of statutory perspective in terms of enforcing age restrictions and various other things that would, you know, bestow on them additional protections. That is really important. I think also we've done a lot of work around developing better interventions for offenders earlier to take them out from coming into stores. Because it's often repeat offenders that target stores that cause the biggest issues, and that spills over into violence and abuse. So how do we look at tackling the root causes of what violence and abuse is? And some of the challenges we've identified is the use of out-of-court disposals, and perhaps those sanctions and fines are not always the best way to deal with those individuals. And actually what we need to do is look at earlier interventions to look at the root causes of those challenges. Maybe it's alcohol or drug addiction or other social issues that are making them offend. And in doing that, hopefully you stop a bigger problem arising further down the line. So I think there's a look at the justice system's response to other offences that might lead onto this as well, which is a key challenge in addition to the tougher penalties.
And certainly look out for more of that both in terms of the sort of hustings with PCCs and our engagement with government, all leading up to the publication of the crime report, as I said earlier, in March. And Katie, I guess last question to you, which is similar kind of vein about central regulation and central government. Obviously, with the elections coming up, you'll be doing lots of campaigning to the public and to businesses. But what about up the chain? Is there anything you find in terms of frustration about the powers that you have, the powers that you would like to have, anything you'd like to be able to do in the community that you're not able to do with your current role?
Well, interestingly, the government are reviewing the role of the PCC at the moment. So it's a two-part review. They're doing a sort of quick and dirty one this year. And then post the election, they're going to go into greater detail. And it's the post-election bit that I'm really interested in, because I think they could expand our role in the criminal justice area. We already have some responsibility around funding our community safety partnerships in our counties, but actually we could do a lot more around preventing reoffending. So what Edward's just referring to. And I'm going to try and push the boundaries with my own business partnership to see how we might implement some prevention programs with some of our well-known offenders, just to do things differently. So I'd love to be, we were brought in to be innovative, to be creative, to kind of, shake the system up a bit. And in fairness, I've had lots of support around that. So I'm very keen that we do some more innovative work around the prevention piece. And I think that's where, from a PCC's point of view, we can add real value. So I can work, with my probation colleagues, I can work with Crown prosecutors, I can work with the magistrates and others, and the the local offending teams, the local authorities, their youth people and so on, to say actually what sort of other programs could we do that will keep that person probably out of the criminal justice system, but actually might stop their offending in the first place. So yeah, I think there's a lot more to this role. This is why I've stuck with this role and haven't bothered with Parliament, quite frankly, because for me it's much more exciting. You've got hands-on, you can really affect change. And I get to work with great people like Doug. And where would I normally get that opportunity in real life?
And one thing actually, which is really interesting that you said there, I guess applies to any of the hustings. So that if there are any candidates for commissioner that say, oh, well, that's not in my remit, that's not my responsibility, that's not really a good excuse anymore, is it, because of this review? So, keep pushing on all of those issues and all of those things. And like I said, as much as you will be holding the forces to account, we hope the retailers and shop workers will hold, the forces and yourselves and indeed central government account as well. I'm going to leave it there just because I appreciate everyone's extremely busy and everyone's got a lot to do. But thank you to Doug, to Katie and to Ed for joining me on the podcast. And I will just leave it with you, Katie, just to tell everyone where they can go to find all the materials around Keep It Christmas Kind and anything they can do over the next couple of weeks to engage with that.
Well, it's all on my website. So that's sussex-pcc.gov.uk. Or you can send us an email and we'll send you a campaign pack. But, in fairness, a lot of the big retailers have been supporting this. And you'll see it on social media as well. If you put in the hashtag Keeping Christmas Kind, it will come up and you'll be able to sort of pick it up from there. But yeah, all the support we can do. I know it's only a week long campaign, but we're going to keep it running for as long as we can. And I look forward to next year and really making some real change. It's going to be hard work. I have no doubts about that. And we're going to have some challenges ahead, but I'm really looking forward to getting stuck in.
Great. If there's one thing that retailers aren't afraid of, it's a bit of hard work, as that's certainly showing this year. And great. Well, thank you. Thank you, everyone. And we will hear from you again soon.
Thank you.
Huge thanks again to Ed, to Doug and to Katie for that discussion on the podcast, which I hopefully was really useful and just shows that, that this issue is being recognised by people in power. This issue is being hopefully dealt with. And I guess I would leave with just one thought, and that if you're listening to this and you're thinking, who is my police and crime commissioner? I don't think I've ever heard of them. I don't think I've ever seen them. As we talked about, the elections are coming up. This is a really good time to get involved and get your issues specifically on the agenda. So the first thing to do is, if you don't know who your police and crime commissioner is, It is on the Association for Police and Crime Commissioners website. There's a map on there where you can find your PCC. The easiest thing to do is just Google who is my PCC and go from there. So you'll see who the PCC is now. And then when we get into next year, like I say, there'll be hustings all over the place. So just get involved with that. And like I say, hold them to account, because you know, there is probably no greater issue for retailers and shop workers that has no more of a, you know, a serious impact than violence and abuse, and anything we can do to get that higher up the agenda, then you know, it's absolutely worth it. That's it for this episode of the Local Shop Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast to get episodes first before anyone else. And don't forget to follow us as well on Twitter @localshoppod.